So welcome to the teleconference on September 28th, 2012 with our guest Alan Tyson. This is a regular teleconference series that's sponsored by the Tyson Center for Faith and Spirituality in the Workplace at the Sam M. Walton College of Business, University of Arkansas. And we're just delighted to have you as a guest, Alan. And so welcome, Alan.
Thank you.
And what we'll do is just a quick check-in with those of you who are on the call now. We know we'll have more joining us, but just to say hello, say your name and where you are, and then I'll begin with an opening quote, and then we'll have a moment of silence. So just say your name and where you're calling from.
My name is Pamela Ramsfield. I'm calling from Fayetteville, the bookstore on the University of Arkansas bookstore at campus.
Great. Thank you, Pamela.
Thank you.
This is Phil Crandall, and I'm also from Fayetteville.
Thank you. And this is Judy Neal from Fayetteville, and Alan Tyson is not from Fayetteville.
I am from Rogers.
Wow.
We have an Arkansas call so far. Sometimes we actually have people call in from the United Kingdom and Australia, but mostly folks around the U.S. So let's begin with an opening quote. And I chose a quote from Robert Greenleaf, who is the author of The Servant Leader. And he says, "For anything new to emerge, there must be first a dream, an imaginative view of what might be. For something great to happen, there must be a great dream. Then venturesome persons with faith in that dream will persevere to bring it to reality." Robert Greenleaf. So please join me in a moment of silence. Thank you very much. It's my great pleasure to introduce Alan Tyson. I think you probably already know him, but I want to give you a little background in case you don't know him. Alan Tyson is the pastor of Lost Bridge Community Church and has been pastor there since January 3rd, 2010. Although probably that's not technically correct. Maybe it's an official appointment, but that day got snowed out. I remember that because I tried to be there for the service.
I think it was three straight Sundays that we canceled. I had a hard time getting started there, Judith.
But once you got started, you were on a roll.
That's right.
So Alan's a graduate of Forest City High School, and I don't know how to pronounce this. Is it Wachita Baptist University?
Wachita Baptist University,
Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, New York Theological Seminary, and Fuller Theological Seminary. You just wanted to visit everybody, didn't you? Alan was ordained to the ministry in January 1961 and served as pastor of Colt Baptist Church in Colt, Arkansas, and Verona Baptist Church, Blue Ridge, Texas. Alan spent 23 years active duty as a U.S. Army chaplain, and then he retired with the rank of LTC. He was the corporate chaplain for Hudson Foods for 5 years and the director of chaplain services for Tyson Foods for 8 years. He has also served as the staff chaplain, hospice chaplain, and as director of pastoral care services for Mercy Health System, Northwest Arkansas. He is a board-certified chaplain of the Association of Professional Chaplains and serves on their Member Services Council. He also serves on the advisory board of St. Mary's Home Health Agency and on the Council for Endorsement for Chaplains and Pastoral Counselors for the Cooperative Baptist Fellowship. He's also a member of the Tyson Center for Faith and Spirituality in the Workplace Advisory Council or Advisory Board. And I guess the other thing that I would add is I met Alan when Tyson Foods applied for the International Spirit at Work Award, which is an award that I had created along with John Renish back in the year 2000. And Tyson Foods applied, with Alan being the champion of that application. And we really got to know each other that year as we went back and forth with the committee and questions and learning more about the faith-friendly culture at Tyson Foods. And then Alan was able to come to our conference to receive the award, and it was just a beautiful connection. We never knew that we would end up working so closely together or that I would end up moving to Arkansas at that time. So that has just been a real added bonus. So anything you want to add to that, Alan, before I start asking you some interview questions?
No, I think you've covered the territory. Thank you.
All right. So what we're going to do for about the next 20, 25 minutes is I have a series of questions that I'm going to ask Alan, and then we'll open the call up for your questions or your comments. And what we'll focus primarily is on workplace chaplaincy. And we'll end, I'll have some announcements, and Alan, maybe you'll have some announcements as well. And I'll offer a closing reflection. And then, Alan, you'll bring us home. The last closing words will be from you as Spirit moves you. Sound okay?
All right. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. So the first question I want to ask you, and we listed a whole bunch of things you've done around workplace chaplaincy. But what called you to workplace chaplaincy? How did you actually get into this field?
You know, when I was in seminary, there were two things that were, one special thing that was really important to me. I took some clinical pastoral education as a part of my seminary experience. That setting was in a medical center in Houston, Texas, and I was not a good student, but clinical pastoral education, the hands-on pastoral care of people, really turned me on. I loved it, though I wasn't sure I wanted to continue working in the hospital setting, but that at least introduced me to chaplaincy. Another important thing that happened in seminary, I took a course on chaplaincy, and in that process, I visited several military installations to acquaint me with military chaplaincy. We didn't use that term workplace chaplaincy for what we did in the Army, but that is. So right out of seminary, the Vietnam War was building up at that time, and I volunteered to come into the Army as a chaplain, and I was accepted and came in right out of seminary, actually, and began to do Army chaplaincy for the next 23 years. And I refer to that as workplace chaplaincy because the chaplain in the military is where the people are. We go to the rifle range. We go to bivouacs with people. We train with them. We jump out of airplanes with them, rappel, and just do all kind of training, and we visit the motor pool. So it is a workplace chaplaincy setting. I don't know when that term really began to be used most frequently in terms of workplace chaplains, but I love doing that for 23 years. Getting into industry then happened after I got out of the Army. I had the opportunity to move to Rogers and to be the corporate chaplain for Hudson Foods, which was a competitive poultry company of Tyson Foods. And they had had a chaplain for 7 years. Okay, am I okay?
Yeah, I'm sorry. We lost you for a minute. It's okay.
Okay. So that was a great opportunity. Hudson Foods had had a corporate chaplain for 17 years before I became a chaplain in January of 1993, and working for Red Hudson was just a great pleasure. Hudson Foods had 15 plants in 7 or 8 states, and began to hire part-time chaplains at our plant locations that began to minister to our people at each plant location instead of my doing it for the whole company.
Can you put some on?
I worked at Hudson Foods for 5 years, and then Tyson Foods bought Hudson Foods. And I thought with my last name, I've got it made in this new company.
You probably want to let people know that you really are not a relation to that family. But
not a relationship to that family. I am not.
But very connected.
Yeah.
And
so,
Alan, your voice is sort of going in and out. I don't know if you're using a headset or turning away
I'm
from the phone or
using
walking.
My phone, and I will speak more directly into it, okay?
Okay, great. Thank you. Because we are recording this, and I don't want to lose what you're saying.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, so Hudson Foods was bought by Tyson Foods, and Tyson did not have chaplains, and I saw just a great opportunity here. We were becoming a part of a company that had 65,000 workers in it, and I just saw a great opportunity to continue doing what I was doing in that company. They kept us on for 6 months and I think really kind of never really considered keeping us, but I think saw us as being helpful with that transition process as those Hudson plants became Tyson Foods. And so at the age of 57, I was told by Tyson Foods that my services were no longer needed, and that was kind of a crisis for me. What am I going to do when I grow up? But, And so in the meantime, I did...
you weren't going to go back to rappelling and jumping out of airplanes.
No, I was past that stage of life, yes, that's right. And so I had the opportunity to work with Mercy Hospital here in Rogers and became one of their staff chaplains and then director of the department. And then, interestingly enough, Tyson Foods contacted me about 2.5 years later and asked if I would consider coming back and helping them start their chaplains program. The entire structure at the top of Tyson Foods had changed. John Tyson had become, who is the grandson of the founder of the company, had become the CEO and chairman of the board. And because of his own spiritual background and experience, he wanted chaplains as a, he called it alternative team member benefit. In other words, it was never forced on any of our plant operations. But when I joined Tyson Foods, they began to, there were certain plants who were interested in having chaplains, and so I began to work with those plants, and it began to sell itself to the company. A year later, after I joined the company, Tyson Foods bought Iowa Beef Packers, and we were suddenly a company of about 120,000 people, and we were now beef, pork, and poultry. So it was a pretty exciting time as that was happening. So that's the way I got into it. It was Hudson Foods. The chaplain who was there I had known for a number of years, had visited with him when I would come to Rogers to visit my wife's family. And that chaplain had attended a conference in which he met some other military chaplains, and when he started thinking about who might replace him, it occurred to him that a military chaplain could be an ideal person. So Dean Newberry introduced me to Red Hudson, and I was offered that job to go there. So that's kind of how I got into it.
Wow. Thank you so much for that history. Can you tell us more about once you got at Tyson Foods, what did you do? I know you did a whole lot more than chaplains. It was probably at the heart of your work. But you know, can you describe what all of your work was about?
Oh, my goodness. You know, when I think back to it, I was probably pretty naive about some things. I mean, that's a huge company. you know, and they went from being about a $8 billion a year company to being a 20-something billion dollar a year company, and that's just a huge, huge company. And so, you know, this is the question, how do you eat an elephant?
Yeah.
One bite at a time.
Yeah.
And so I had the opportunity to visit with plant managers and human resource managers and to tell them about what we thought we could do. I refer to workplace chaplains as a employee-like assistance program from a spiritual perspective. And it's proactive. The chaplain is in the workplace is not just sitting back waiting for someone to stop by their office. The chaplain ministers by wandering around. Our chaplains were in the production areas of the plant, going up and down production lines, just informally greeting people, saying hello, how's your day going? And when that would happen, there would be a lot of what I refer to as shade tree counseling that would take place. People would say, "Ah, chaplain, glad you stopped by today. You know, my son got picked up by the police last night. Man, I really need your prayers." And so you stand there while that person is processing some cow or a hog or a chicken, and you talk to them for a few minutes, and you may even pray with them there. But and sometimes you might say, "Hey, we know we need to talk a little bit more. Let's meet when you have a break for lunch or you have your next break coming up." And so that was an important part. We also had, we would have conferences, we would have events at the corporate headquarters in which we would have guest speakers come in to speak on different subjects, and that was always a fun thing to do too, and try to just reach out. And whether you're dealing with some leadership things, I got to do some leadership training and using the Myers-Briggs as a instrument of helping people understand their working relationships. I did some of that. And Tyson was known as and part of our core values was that we were a faith-friendly company. And we took that as a company, took that very seriously. One of the ways in which we were really tested on that is we had several plants that had a large influx of immigrant workers who had come here from the Mideast, African nations, Somalia particularly, and we had literally hundreds of Muslim team members in our plant locations that began to take place. And so we had to process that whole thing about the prayer needs of the Muslim team members, and Tyson went to great lengths to try to accommodate those needs by providing a prayer room, a place where people could wash themselves as they need to do before they have their time of prayer, and have their prayer, and to work that out with the production people. So that was a continuing challenge that we had, but it was important that we did that as a company.
Well, and at one time, I think this is after you left even, but at one time wasn't there hue and cry because the Christians felt like too much was attention was being paid to the Muslim employees and that they weren't getting their fair treatment or something like that?
That would come up probably in every plant where we had that issue, mm-hmm. in the sense, and you'd have to explain to people that, and we would work really hard with all of our team members trying to explain that this was the Muslim faith, one of the tenets of their faith is that they pray five times a day, and they have the set times in which they do that. That's a requirement of their faith. And so, you know, Christians can pray anytime and anywhere, and we encourage them to do, and we provide religious accommodation to our Christian team members who want to go to retreats, who may want to take time off if their plan is working on Sunday morning and they want to go to worship, to accommodate for them having time to go to worship as they are involved in work even that day. So, that was an issue that we had to deal with on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. So, and then there's also, is it called Bring Your Pastor to Work Day? Or Bring
Yes.
Your Minister? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, we had clergy appreciation days at many of our plants in which we would encourage our team members to bring their pastor, and we would usually feed them, and that was always an attraction for pastors. We do like to eat. And so we would have those pastor appreciation days. We would feed them. We would tell them about the work of the chaplains and what we were doing. We're not there trying to take their parishioners by any means, but we're there to, and frequently we refer people to back to their local pastor if we know that they have one, and give them a tour of the plant to help them understand the culture of Tyson Foods and what we're trying to do and what we bring to the community. So that was an event that we would do many times, yes.
I've never heard of that anywhere else. Are you aware of something like Clergy Appreciation Day anywhere else?
Never known it to be happening anywhere else, no.
Yeah, that was pretty unique.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on a little bit in your history, and actually go backwards and forwards, if you don't mind. So backwards, I'd love to hear a summary of your spiritual journey. You know, we love to talk to each of our guests about their faith tradition and how that's evolved for them over time and where you see yourself going.
Okay.
And a part of that would be also your church, where you are now, and your continued work with workplace chaplains since you've retired from Tyson Foods.
Okay. I grew up in a traditional Southern Baptist family in Forest City, Arkansas. My dad was a meat salesman and a deacon in our church. Mom was a very active person in our church also. Growing up Southern Baptist, I didn't know anything else. I was pretty suspicious of Methodists and certainly Assemblies of God and, you know, Catholics I wasn't too sure about. And so I had some prejudice there. And coming into the Army was a great experience for me. For in the Army, I was a Protestant chaplain. I mean, I was endorsed for chaplains by the Southern Baptist Convention. But I was a Protestant chaplain, which meant that in the chapels that I pastored, I had people from all different faith denominations, Presbyterian, Episcopalian, Methodist, Baptist, you name it. We would worship together. And I really came to appreciate the variety of ways that people can worship God and serve Him, and came to appreciate that. So that was a great growing experience for me to be in the military. I did leave Southern Baptist some years back, and it was really for me over the issue of women in ministry. I realized that Southern Baptist had finally moved to a place that I could no longer support, because I had known too many women in ministry that were very effective, and I feel God will call whom He will, and so I left Southern Baptist. I can't remember when it was. It was after I was at Tyson Foods, actually, and became endorsed for chaplains by the Cooperative Baptist Fellowship, which is a more moderate group of Baptist. My spiritual journey has, you know, it was a crisis for me of losing my job at 57, at age 57. What am I going to be when I grow up? And And yet, through all of that and through a cardiac arrest that I had in 1999, I really have a renewed appreciation for God's not through with me yet. And so he's got something for me to do, and he's got a calling for me, and that has been has renewed my faith in many times as I look back on those events and to see how God began to open up opportunities and at a time when I didn't know that I would could keep on going on in some areas of my life. So that cardiac arrest was a crisis. It was it happened when I was on vacation with my family. When I arrested, I didn't see the light as some people have described, but I had a deep sense of peace about what was happening, and I knew it was serious. I didn't know if I would live through it. I was wondering if my wife would remember where those papers were that I'd given her that had a lot of information about it. But that was, and to see how God has used me beyond that time and how I've continued to have some good health over these last, I guess, 13 years. That was 13 years ago that happened for me. I've had a kind of a new spiritual experience through a community called Breakthrough here in Northwest Arkansas. That is a group of people that go through a common experience over a three-weekend period in which it's a really a spiritual formation and personal growth session, and that was a very renewing experience for me most recently. So that's been super. I'm just delighted with the congregation I pastor now is an interdenominational church, which I'm very comfortable in pastoring that cross-denominational congregation. That has been a wonderful experience to get back to preaching again after not doing that for almost 20 years. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. That congregation is predominantly an adult congregation. We've grown. We've helped even birth another church in the area that has continued to grow and flourish also.
And for those of you who are on the call from Arkansas, if you haven't been to Lost Bridge Community Church, which is at Whitney Mountain Chapel in Garfield, and haven't heard Alan preach, give yourself the gift of that sometime. My husband and I have been several times, and the building itself is so inspiring. But Alan, I love hearing you preach, and your gentleness and your wisdom and your humor, and it's always, always inspiring. So you definitely have a gift for it, and I love seeing you use that gift well.
Thanks, Judith. Appreciate it. The conference that I'll be doing at the university in October, I think it's October the 31st,
mm-hmm.
on the workplace chaplaincy, and I'm asking several other chaplains who are doing workplace chaplaincy to join us by conference call. One is Kevin Gleisner, who's in Pella, Iowa. He is a chaplain for the Vermeer Corporation that makes both farm implements as well as construction implements. Kevin has been doing that for a number of years now, and he will be joining us on that call. Rich Langdon will also join us on that day. Rich is the executive director of Workplace Chaplains USA out of Cadillac, Michigan, and he is in charge of a company that markets workplace chaplains to corporations and to businesses. So he may have them in a fast food place. They may be chaplains in a car lubrication place or an auto dealership, and those folks will join us. Plus, I've invited also Will Gardner, who's the corporate chaplain for Simmons Food in Salem Springs to be a part of that conference. So we will be having those folks to share their experience also with workplace chaplaincy and talking about, you know, how do you get in the door and how do you do some of the things that you do and how do you convince folks that you have some value to add to their company.
I can't wait for that. That is just going to be of such great value. And even if somebody isn't wanting to be a workplace chaplain, it'll be very valuable for those folks. But for someone who just wants to understand different ways of implementing faith and spirituality in a workplace, this is such a concrete way where there's really clear evidence of the positive difference that it makes. And so the stories that you folks will tell, that's just going to be really valuable. I do want to add, too, that if someone is a corporate chaplain and is looking for continuing education units, that if you attend the conference, we have certificates. We don't have CEUs, but we have certificates of attendance that you can use to document your participation for any continuing education units. We did that for chaplains last year, and that seemed to be valuable.
Yes.
Yeah. So what else would you like to see come out of the Wisdom at Work conference? You'll have your session, and there's a couple of other sessions on workplace chaplaincy and Tyson Foods that Tyson is doing. And that when you attended last year and you're coming again this year, what are you hoping for yourself?
Well, the conference is just a wonderful opportunity to meet people from around the world. I don't remember how many countries were represented last year, but it was...
I think it was 9.
Yeah.
Not including the U.S., yeah.
That is amazing. And the kind of network that you can begin to form and just to share with people the spiritual journeys that they're on and how that's happening in different settings is just a really encouraging place to be. So I'm looking forward to, again, both meeting new people and interacting with those that I met from last year and continuing a connectedness with them and learning from them.
Really looking forward to having you there. You bring so much. I haven't asked you yet if you'll do an opening prayer at some point or, some kind of prayer as we do throughout the sessions, as you know. And so I'm going to be tapping you to help us with that.
Sure.
Thank you. So my last question before we open this up for everyone is, what's next for you on the horizon for your life, your spiritual journey, your work?
Where do you see yourself going
besides a lot of bicycling?
Yeah.
You can talk about that.
Dale and I just took almost a 2-week vacation, and we went out to southern Utah and saw just God's beautiful country, the national parks that are a part of the southern Utah, the arches, and just seeing God's beautiful world. That was such a blessing. We ended up at the Grand Canyon and experienced that, and you just have a great appreciation for the creativity of God when you see this world that we're in. So I still want to see some more world. I want to do that. I love pastoring my church. I hope I can do that for a long time yet and continue to grow people out there and challenge them to keep growing in their Christian life. I stay connected with a pastor's peer group that meets together about every 2 months or so that encourage one another. I have opportunities from time to time to consult with a company about chaplains, either giving them feedback about how their chaplains are doing and evaluating that or helping them consider the possibility of having chaplains and helping them get a program started and select a chaplain and train them to get it started. So I have the chance to do that, and I hope I'll continue to do that. I love staying connected with Tyson Foods. My replacement there has done a wonderful job, and Rick McKinney is the corporate chaplain there now and is just continuing to do a great job.
Wow. Well, wonderful. Thank you so much. So I would like to open it up to questions. I hope we've intrigued you and made you curious to learn more about Alan and his work. And so as you make your question, ask your questions or make comments, just say your name first so Alan knows who's speaking. And it's open.
Hi, this is Linnea. Can you hear me?
Hi, Linnea. Yes, we can.
Hi, hi, hi.
Hi, dude. It's great to hear your voice.
Thanks, honey. You too. First of all, thank you so very much. I'm so pleased that you all are addressing this topic, and I'm very moved by your experience. Dr. Reverend, what do I call you?
Alan.
Alan? Okay, I can do that. Thank you. So this is Linnea Brinkerhoff, and Judy has always been a bridge for me to many next steps in my life. And one question I have is, as I look at my experience as an ordained interfaith minister through 2 years of seminary, a board-certified coach, a 20-year OD consultant, a professor, and a healer, I'm listening to what you're saying, and I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, this just really feels like it fits. I'm 48, and I just kind of wonder, is this a viable, I didn't really even know it was a career option.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah,
okay.
It is. It certainly can be, there are a number of groups out there that are marketing chaplains. I mentioned Workplace Chaplains USA and Cadillac. There's another group in Dallas. There's some in North Carolina that market chaplain services and hire both full and part-time chaplains to work with them. Most of them are wanting seminary-trained people to do that work. Having a business background is very valuable also, and is important to others, particularly Corporate Chaplains of America. They like people with business experience also as their chaplains. Tyson Foods is hiring full-time chaplains at their plants now. I did not do that, but the new person that replaced me is doing that, so there are career opportunities, and I think workplace chaplains is a growing segment of chaplaincy ministry. Healthcare has been the predominant role of that in the military, perhaps, and chaplains, but workplace chaplains is continuing to grow in around the country.
Beautiful. And so you said corporate chaplains is a place, like, what would one do? I know that you're going to be making a presentation on October 31st, but I'm selfishly asking you now, what would be some of the steps that one might take?
Let me just give you my email information, and I'll be glad to pass on some contact information to you. It's Alan, spelled A-L-A-N. Alan, @cox.net.
Mm-hmm.
I would add to respond to your questions and perhaps point you in some ways that you might check out.
That's so exciting. Thank you so much. Beautiful. What experience you have. Thanks so much for your work.
Thank you.
Thanks, Linnea. That is exciting. Okay, other questions?
I can ask you another one.
Yeah.
Well, just, you spoke about, I guess I'm curious, what was a high and what was a low of yours in your corporate chaplaincy time in terms of serving Muslims or serving other Baptists or non-believers? You know, I mean, yeah, what was a snafu or a difficult time you ran into, and what was something that really stands out as something that was a great moment in your corporate chaplaincy?
Well, it was both a high and a low. 9/11 happened just about a month after we had acquired Iowa Beef Packers. So we were a company that went from being poultry, predominantly poultry, to being a company now of 120,000 people. And these beef and pork people didn't know a thing about chaplains. That was really foreign to their industry. And when 9/11 happened, I was actually visiting with a truck driver that morning when there was a television in the lounge where we were, and we saw what was happening, and I immediately left there and went over to the corporate headquarters. One of the executive vice presidents saw me in the hall and said, "Alan, let's go down and see Johnny, and we need to have a prayer or something over our intercom system here at the headquarters." So,
and say who Johnny is.
John Tyson. John Tyson. And so we went down and visited with him. I quickly wrote out a prayer that I read over the intercom system a little bit later that morning, and then that prayer was sent out company-wide. I did not have access at that time to the beef and pork people, but that went out. So that was their first introduction to chaplains. That they said, "You know, what is this?" You know, and that week was quite a week. We ended up on that Friday of that week. We had a gathering out in our courtyard at the corporate headquarters. Probably 400 or 500 people gathered there. We had we sang "God Bless America." We rang some bells. We offered a prayer again. That prayer again was sent out company wide. But by the end of the week, I could not talk to another person. I had listened so much, and of course, when I would come home, I would be glued to the television of what was going on. But I was so I don't know if it was a burnout or what it was, but I was overwhelmed by the end of the week. And when that service was over on that Friday noontime, I left the office. I had to go home, and I went home and I cried all weekend. So you know, it was a high moment in the sense that chaplains got some visibility in the company in a wonderful way. But it took a lot out of me, and I had to get away and walk away from it because I couldn't hear anyone else. I couldn't take in anymore. I was used up.
Thank you. It's amazing. Thank you.
Another story that I'd love to have you tell, Alan, is the story of the wedding in Mexico.
Oh man, that is a story. It's hard to believe this. We have poultry operations in Mexico, and we had 7 or 8 chaplains that worked in the poultry complexes that we have in Mexico. And the chaplains, working with the human resource people in the plants, found that there are a lot of people that don't get married in Mexico. They just live together. And, of course, if there's a death or something like that, there are complications that come up with that. So the chaplains started reaching out to those people that they knew were, you know, living together but not married. And they began to have some classes for them to talk about marriage. They encouraged them to get married. And some people didn't have birth certificates, so the chaplains would work with them and HR people to to get the paperwork done that these people needed to get done. And then the culmination of this is that we had a mass wedding ceremony down there. We had probably 30-something couples, maybe more than that. Maybe it was 50. It was quite a few couples that came together, and we had the mayor of the city, the president of that state of Mexico, and they put on the dog for this. The human resource people gave money to where they could buy silver rings, where each of these couples could exchange a ring in the wedding ceremony. I mean, that's pretty amazing. And so we had a mass wedding ceremony for these couples, had a feast of a banquet, had a mariachi band playing. It was a marvelous occasion that the whole company really backed and encouraged, and that was one of the most fun things I've ever done.
Yeah, that sounds, you know, when I've heard your stories, Alan, that was one of your high points.
Yeah, absolutely it was.
Yeah, the joy of people who wanted to be married and couldn't afford to and didn't have the capability, and to get that kind of support from the company is just above and beyond the call of duty.
Was, yeah.
Yeah, that's really
Alan, cool. I don't know if you know, but I once upon a time performed a wedding for Judy herself.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
she was my minister.
Yeah, all right.
And it was a beautiful wedding.
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody else, I don't think anybody else there in the, you know, said I do or I will. So I think it was just you who got married that day.
Yeah. There was a group, but it wasn't a group wedding.
Right.
Yeah. So other questions or comments for Alan? We've got probably about 5 more minutes for anything you'd like to have him talk about or you'd like to share with him.
Alan, this is Pamela. And
yes.
I thank you very much for speaking with us today. And there was a comment that you made, you know, just one step at a time. I feel like I'm just now embarking on a new direction in ministry, in some kind of service. And although I heed that one step at a time, and I practically, I just want you to speak on, you know, through the life, looking back on accomplishments, it's easy to see how one navigates to get where they are. But when they're looking ahead, just how do you navigate into the future?
Good question.
You know, gosh, how to answer that question? I firmly believe that God opens up some opportunities for us. And, you know, these were opportunities. I could not have manufactured those myself. I mean, it's not to my credit by any means that any of this happened for me. I've had a wonderful career that I'm really thankful for. But I really do see it as a God thing. He's just opened up some opportunities, and when some things were closed, and you know, even in the Army, the 23 years I was there, there were some assignments that I wasn't particularly excited about. But when I got there, it ended up being one of the best experiences of my life. But I couldn't see it on this side of that. You have to kind of go through it to experience it. So I think we all walk by faith, and we don't always know that, you know, what we're doing is the thing, but we feel that God's prompting us in a certain way, and I think we have to pay attention to those things. And And so sometimes we go not as Abraham did. He left not knowing where he was going, you know. And I think we all have to walk by faith in some ways, and it's not something of our own creation many times, I think.
Well, thank you very much.
Alan, could you say a little bit more about how you listen for those promptings? Are there specific ways or practices or sensing the signs that you help guide people to pay attention to?
You know, certainly a lot of prayer went into those times. And certainly there were some times I went complaining. I didn't want to go. One of those, when I went back to Europe for my second tour of duty, I really wasn't wanting to go. Matter of fact, I was the last one getting on the plane. I was hoping it'd be full, and they couldn't seat me. And you know, but I had, you know, I knew that God was in charge of things, and I wasn't, and I couldn't see it. And it really took months for that to work out, to begin to fall in place. And so I think certainly our hindsight's always better than our foresight. But a lot of prayer goes into it, a lot of listening. Trusted friends is really important. Having someone, I'm preaching on Friendship Sunday, and you know, having some folks that you can be honest with and have some honest feedback has been important to me over the years. My wife has been my best critic and my best feedback, and so being able to listen to her at times, though I don't always listen well, and she'll tell you that, but you know, having those folks to come alongside you and encourage you and pray with you and be honest and give you some feedback is, I think, another important thing that has been helpful to me over the years.
Beautiful.
There's probably more to that answer to that question than to that answer that I can give, but
by Sunday you'll have more answers.
Have more answers Sunday.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you everybody for being on the call. I'm going to move into a few announcements, and then we'll have a closing reflection, and Alan will do our final closing. So I'm sure maybe not everybody knows that at the end of October we are having the Wisdom at Work Conference, which is an outgrowth of the International Faith and Spirit at Work Conference last year. So this will be our second conference that's hosted by the Tyson Center for Faith and Spirituality in the Workplace. And it is free to faculty, staff, and students at the University of Arkansas, as long as you don't mind that we don't feed you. We have, as Alan mentioned, we do have people coming from many countries, from India, Australia, New Zealand, Norway, Dubai, UK, Canada, and all over the U.S. And the people who come to this are a combination of business leaders and faith leaders from different traditions. We have a Tibetan monk, for instance, and a Jewish rabbi, and evangelical Christians, and people that are interfaith, and just a wonderful mixture of faith traditions, and then researchers who are very cutting-edge academics. So we mix it up. Everybody gets together to learn from each other and inspire each other and move our work together forward individually and collectively. And so we hope that if you weren't considering joining us, that you will. And please feel free to go to the Tyson Center website for more information or to call or email me. As part of getting ready for the conference, we're holding dialogues like this with Alan and with other keynote speakers and presenters. Our website under the podcast tab has recordings of past teleconferences with keynote speakers, and we have a few more phone calls coming up. On October 8th is with Andre Delbecq, who is a faculty member at the University of Santa Clara and one of the real pioneers in bringing contemplative practices into MBA programs in Silicon Valley, where he brings Silicon Valley executives together with the MBA students, and they learn from each other. And so he's really special and deep and profound, and it'll be really wonderful to learn from him. On October 19th, we have Robert Ouimet, who is the chairman of OCB Holding Company, which is the largest food production plant for processing frozen and canned foods in Canada. And his company, for just about 40 years, has been implementing spirituality in the workplace. They went through a very interesting patch a couple of years ago as he turned it over to his sons, and the programs all fell away, and that just didn't work. In fact, the business was just about going bankrupt, and he has taken the company back. He's in his 70s and reinstituting the program. So it's an amazing kind of field study of what can happen with leadership and how to turn a company around both financially and spiritually. So he'll have quite a story to tell. I've been asked by our conference planning committee to have me be a keynote speaker this year, which feels kind of awkward to me, but my arm was really hurting, and so I screamed yes, okay, and I'll be doing a keynote, and probably we'll do a teleconference if we can squeeze that in. So if you're not on our email list, please email me at jneal@walton.uark.edu, and I can get you on the list for our upcoming events. Alan, before I do a closing reflection, do you have any announcements besides your Sunday sermon that's going to be on friendship? Anything else you'd like to tell people?
No, I don't think so at this point. Thank you.
Okay. My closing reflection comes from Fred Rogers, Fred Rogers. And he writes, I think this is just a beautiful quote, and it makes me think of you so much, Alan, because of your sense of service. Fred writes, "At the center of the universe is a loving heart that continues to beat and that wants the best for every person. Anything we can do to help foster the intellect and spirit and emotional growth of our fellow human beings, that is our job. Those of us who have this particular vision must continue against all odds. Life is for service." So, Alan, any last words from you? And thank you again so much for being my guest today, and also to all of you on the call.
You know, I would do the benediction I do every Sunday, and I don't do it lightly, but may the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious unto you, both now and forever. Go in peace. And my congregation responds back to me, to be servants in the world.
To be servants in the world.
Yes.
Amen. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Judith.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.